The summer travel vacation season is about to begin, and I'm wondering who else has some national parks on their travel list this year. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, May 29th. I hope you had a wonderful Memorial Day weekend and weren't bothered too much by the heat and the storms. By the way, we will be cooling off quite a bit this week. I'll have more in our weather forecast in just a few minutes. We will be talking with a guest this hour who says your summer vacation plans should include America's national parks. And we will wonder if there's a park that you've been hoping to see or one that you're yearning to see again. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Mel White, a regular contributor to National Geographic magazine, author of National Geographic Complete National Parks of the United States, and co-author of the forthcoming Secrets of the National Parks, The Expert's Guide to Getting Off the Tourist Trail. Good morning.
Hi.
So when is that new book coming out?
I believe it's scheduled for this fall. I'm just now finishing up my text. I'm doing maybe a third of the book, and other authors are doing the rest of the book, and I'm just finishing up my last park this week. So it's got to go to the editors, photo selection, text editing, and putting the book together.
Well, looking forward to it. Are you you're trying to encourage people to get off the beaten track, to become more than windshield tourists?
That's right. That's a term that they use in national park rangers and staff people use. For the kind of visitors who tend to get off the interstate, drive through the park, stop at a couple of overlooks, take a few pictures, and then just get back on the interstate and keep going, and they feel like they've seen the park when they've really usually seen just a tiny bit of it. Some parks are more susceptible to that than others. For instance, Petrified Forest National Park, it's very convenient to just exit the interstate, drive the loop, drive the road through the heart of the park, and then get back on the interstate. So we're encouraging people to at least hike a few trails, maybe take an easy canoe ride, take a couple of unpaved back roads, and enhance their park visits.
Well, I hope we can share some of those secrets this hour as we go along. How many national parks, or about how many national parks, do we have to choose from?
Well, I believe there are 54 national parks. The book I did, The Complete National Parks, includes things like national monuments, national historic sites, national battlefields. And there are really more than 400 of those. Some of them are very, very small and a little bit obscure. But as far as the major national parks, I believe there are 54.
So is the Apostle Islands National Seashore along Lake Superior north of here considered a national park?
Well, it's administered by the National Park Service, so it is a park of the United States, but it's not an official national park because it's not called a national park. But it certainly has many of the attributes and qualities of a national park.
So, have you been to every one of the national parks?
Oh no, I have not. Some of the ones, like in Alaska, for instance, there are some really obscure wilderness parks that you can get to only by plane, and literally a couple of hundred people a year visit them. So very few people have been up there. For those parks, when I was doing the book, I relied on interviews with park rangers and administrators.
So why and how does an area become a national park?
Well, there are lots of reasons. The original national parks were almost all, well, they were all west of Mississippi in great, large, untouched, almost wilderness areas back in the early, in the late 19th and early 20th century. It wasn't until a couple of decades into the 20th century that Acadia National Park was designated the first national park east of the Mississippi. At that point, people had begun to realize that people in the eastern United States deserve some national parks, too. And then in 1947, the Everglades was created, and of course, we have Smoky Mountains National Park and Shenandoah National Park and others now. One of the odder national parks is in the state where I live, which is Arkansas, and it's Hot Springs National Park, which today, to be perfectly honest, probably doesn't deserve to be a national park. It should be a national historic site or monument. But because of the strange historical connections that it had way back in the 19th century, it was designated a national park.
But why do you say it shouldn't be a national park?
I'm going to get in trouble with the local tourism people for a second. It's very small, and it was designated a national. It was actually America's first federally designated protected area, because in those days, in the 19th century, it was thought that the waters in these hot springs had healing powers, and it was set aside as a place where, for instance, injured soldiers could go to recuperate. And so it was designated America's first federal reservation, shall we say. And later on, it was designated a national park. In Ohio, there's Cuyahoga National Park, which also was designated for really sort of political reasons. It was a national recreation area for a long, long time. And then, in the last couple of decades, it was decided it would become a national park, pretty much by politicians, not by park administrators.
Well, now we're getting some secrets of the national parks that we didn't know about. So where are the closest national parks to Wisconsin offhand?
Well, if you're talking about the 54 true national parks, Voyageurs National Park in Minnesota is quite close. Cuyahoga Valley in Ohio is quite close. And when I say that it was designated for political reasons, that doesn't mean it's not a great place to go. It has many wonderful attributes, including some wonderful waterfalls and recreation areas. Mm-hmm. If you go a little bit further west, I'll mention a couple that I really like a lot. In North Dakota, Theodore Roosevelt National Park, I think, is a very beautiful and underrated park. It has history and scenery and wildlife that together make a really great experience for a park.
Are you aware of any talk of any other areas that might become a national park one day?
Well, yes. In fact, I did a little piece for the National Geographic website last year about what might be the next national parks. And I could have looked that up before. But one of them, for instance, people who would love to see a national park in northern Maine. There's vast areas of forest up there and great wildlife. It's very hot potato politically, though, because of hunting interests and timber interests and outdoor recreation people and development interests who do not want a national park there. So I would say the odds are somewhat slim, but there are people who are working really, really hard to try to make that happen in northern Maine.
Well, I know you put together a top 10 list of national parks that we can talk about during this hour, and we'll get to that in just a moment with Mel White, who is a regular contributor to National Geographic magazine. He's author of National Geographic Complete National Parks of the United States and co-author of the forthcoming Secrets of the National Parks. And we're welcoming your questions for him. We're welcoming your favorite national park. Is there a park that you've been hoping to see or one you want to see again? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking the weather forecast for today, turning cloudy with a chance of showers in northern Wisconsin. It'll be mostly sunny in the south with highs in the 50s, 60s, and 70s today. A chance of showers in northern Wisconsin tonight, and then partly to mostly cloudy and cooler tomorrow, with highs only in the mid-50s in the north to the low 60s in the south. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up in our next hour after 7 o'clock, the presidential race and the back and forth over Mitt Romney's business experience and President Obama's lack of it. We'll talk about the Bain debate coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now, we are having some fun talking about some of our magnificent national parks. And we welcome your questions for our guest expert at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also tell us about the national park that you love to see and would love to see again. You know, I noticed on your list of the top 10 national parks, number 10, I'm happy to say I will be going to in just a couple of weeks, the National Mall and Memorial Parks in Washington, D.C., which isn't maybe the first thing that comes to mind when we think of a national park. It doesn't have to be a natural wonder, I take it, Mel.
Right. Again, that's not one of the sort of 58, of quote, official national parks, but it's a wonderful area to go, and it's administered by the National Park Service. And I put it on my list of my top 10 parks simply because it's such a wonderful place to take a family. Washington is a beautiful city, really, and there's so many things to do there in and around the mall.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've been there before, but we never saw the inside of the White House, so that's one thing I'm planning to do. Mm-hmm. And we're going to take a tour of the White House and the Capitol building. But what else? What else should we see if we only have a couple of days?
Well, of course, the famous monuments, the Washington National Monument, which I think right now is closed. You can't go up here because of that
earthquake
that happened a couple of years ago. And they're still studying it to learn how to stabilize it. But there's, of course, the iconic Lincoln Memorial and the reflecting pool. There's the quite moving memorials, the Vietnam War Memorial and the fairly new Korean War Memorial. Both of which are very evocative to folks who are interested in history. And simply just strolling along the mall, the broad walkways, it's a wonderful place to go jogging, to bike. There are roving park rangers you can stop and talk to who will give you little mini history lessons about the things you see on the mall.
I'm looking forward to it. That'll be great. Number 9 on your list is one that I've been near but never actually visited, Dry Tortugas National Park.
Yes, that's one of the odder ones. I'm an avid bird watcher, and so when you're a bird watcher, you tend to go to some of the more obscure national parks. That's that park comprises some very, very small islands about 90 miles west of Key West. They're out in the Gulf of Mexico. And in spring, when the birds are migrating north from Central America, South America, they're flying north across the Gulf of Mexico, and they're just extremely tired and hungry. And when they see these tiny little dots of land, they just zoom right down there to rest and get water and feed. And so if you're there on these little tiny islands in from late March through April, it's like being in a zoo, except they're wild birds. So it's the only way you get there is by boat or seaplane.
Yeah, it's interesting because my sister and her husband are avid bird watchers, and the reason I know about that park is they went there to bird watch. So
right.
It must be famous in bird watching circles.
But it's fascinating historically because there's a huge brick fort that was built there that takes up almost the entire little island because it was built to protect keep foreign ships from coming into the Gulf of Mexico, but right after it was built, new sorts of artillery were developed, and it was obsolete almost immediately. But it's this massive structure that's fun to tour, it was also a federal prison for a long time. And the doctor who treated Abraham Lincoln's assassin, whose name was Samuel Mudd, I believe, was actually confined there for quite some time.
And as for number 7 on your list, Adam on Facebook writes, number 8 on your list, Adam on Facebook writes, I will be going to Theodore Roosevelt National Park and Glacier this summer. I would love to hear some information on these parks.
Well, as I said earlier, Theodore Roosevelt, to me, is one of the most underrated parks in our country. It has everything from a quite easy paved driving trail through the park. I think it's about 50 miles. And you can see bison. If you're lucky, you can see elk. They have a wild horse herd there. They have pronghorn. There's a cabin that Theodore Roosevelt himself lived in way back in the 1880s when he owned a couple of ranches around there. The cabin has been moved from its original location, but you can see where he lived. It's also a park that has actually three separate units. The south unit is right on the interstate, and it's the one that almost everybody goes to. But if you take the time to drive about 50 miles north to the north unit, you're going to escape a lot of the crowds, and you're going to see some absolutely beautiful scenery up there and hiking trails that are far less crowded. And then there's yet a third unit that is the actual site of Theodore Roosevelt's ranch. Now, there's nothing left of his structures, but you can go there and see the same sights he saw, the same trees, the same river, and experience what he experienced when he owned those ranches in North Dakota.
Fantastic. About where in North Dakota is this?
Well, it's in the southwestern corner, more or less, of North Dakota.
And what about Glacier? That's not on your list, but that's a gorgeous park.
Oh, yes. Well, my list is my own personal list. That's actually another book that National Geographic did that folks might want to look into is called The 10 Best of Everything National Parks. National Geographic has put out several of these 10 best books. And this book has the 10 best birding parks, the 10 best wildlife parks, the 10 most romantic parks, the 10 wildflower parks, the 10 best canoeing parks. And so they ask all of us who contributed to that book to list our personal favorites. And so just because I didn't put Glacier doesn't mean it's not one of the top.
Oh, sure. I enjoy this, too, because I'm hearing about some parks that I really hadn't heard about before. So that's neat. But Glacier, I have visited. And I remember we took a June vacation there once and decided to take a hike up in the mountains, and there was a blizzard going on. So yeah, we had to cancel that hike.
Same thing happened to me once in Rocky Mountain National Park. The first time I went there many, many, many years ago, I went in June and just pictured being able to go hiking. And if you went up in the top of the mountains, there was about 8 feet of snow left. No, Glacier is fantastic. Of course, some of the most fantastic scenery in America. The Going to the Sun Highway is really possibly the most spectacular road in the United States. And the interesting thing, of course, though, is that with climate change, the glaciers are melting in Glacier National Park. So if you want to see the glaciers, you might want to go pretty soon.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Mel White about our national parks. If you have a question for him or a park you would like to recommend, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And we go to John in Richland Center now. Hi, John.
Hello.
Yes, do you have a favorite national park?
Yes, real close to Wisconsin is the Isle Royale National Park.
Is that, that's an island, right?
Yes, it's an entire island, like 10 miles wide and 50 miles long. You need to take the ranger boat out of Houghton Hancock to get there.
Yeah, now, is that considered one of the Apostle Islands? I don't remember, John.
Oh, no, it's actually 20 miles from Canada, but 60 miles from Houghton.
And why do you like Isle Royale?
It's very romantic. There's no cars, no traffic. Nothing except trails and duplex cabins to live in.
And wolves, too, I understand.
Yes, wolves.
Cool. So, Mel, have...
ice from Canada years ago.
I'm sorry?
They came across on the ice from Canada years ago.
That's fascinating. So, Mel, what about Isle Royale?
Yes, I totally agree. It's a little bit of an effort to get to. As the gentleman said, you have to take a boat. But and there's two or three different boats you can take to get there. But one of them, the ranger gives you a program as you're crossing Lake Superior to get to the island. It gives you history, background, and information that you need to know before you get there. And you mentioned wolves. That national park, that island, is the site of one of the world's longest running biological studies. People have been studying the interaction between wolves and moose on Isle Royale for, I think, more than 50 years. So there's a fascinating scientific project that's been going on for decades there.
Thank you very much, John, for suggesting Isle Royale. I'm going to check into that someday. Well, back to your top 10 list, and we're going in going from 10 to 1 as we go throughout the hour. I don't even know how to pronounce this this national park in Arizona, Mel.
Saguaro National Park, yes. That was originally a national monument, and then a couple of decades ago it was designated a national park, and I think it deserves it. You of course, know what a saguaro cactus is, those iconic cactuses with the arms that raise up that almost look like people, you know, have humorous forms. Well, those cactus are found only in the Sonoran Desert, which is in southern Arizona and northern Mexico, and they're fascinating plants, and this national park is right almost in the city of Tucson. There's two units, the east and west unit, and the east unit is east of downtown Tucson. The west unit is to the west side, and there's hiking trails. And I just love the desert. I love being out there at dawn and hearing the birds sing and smelling the creosote bush. And I just think it's a beautiful place to go.
And number six on your list is in your neck of the woods, Buffalo National River.
Yes. In fact, it's celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. Here in Arkansas, where I live, we had many incredibly beautiful mountain rivers up in the Ozark Mountains and the Ouachita Mountains. And back in the middle part of the 20th century, almost every single one of them was dammed to form great big reservoirs. Well, a lot of people saw this happening back in the 50s and drew the line at Buffalo River, this gorgeous mountain stream that goes under 500-foot-tall bluffs through the Ozark Mountains. Crystal clear water, beautiful canoeing stream. And they said, we're not going to let this one be destroyed by a dam. So there was a huge political fight that lasted decades and finally culminated in 1972 when President Richard Nixon signed the bill creating the Buffalo National River. It's part of the National Park Service, but it's called the National River. And today it's about 135 miles of absolutely beautiful canoeing stream, tall sandstone bluffs, wonderful forest, and it's one of the most underrated parks in America, if you ask me.
We will talk about more of Mel White's favorite national parks and hope to hear from more of you as well at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. More after the news.
As I went a-walking that river, this land is your land and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
We are talking about this land. We are taking a radio tour of some of our great national parks, and our guest has some tips on sights to see that are off the beaten tourist track. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:36 on this Tuesday, May 29th. If you are planning to travel this summer to see one or more of our national parks, I hope you will join in and ask your question or share your recommendation, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Mel White. He is a regular contributor to National Geographic magazine, author of National Geographic Complete National Parks of the United States, and co-author of the forthcoming Secrets of the National Parks, The Expert's Guide to Getting Off the Tourist Trail. And we have many callers, so let's go back to the phones. Kevin in Richland Center is with us next. Hello, Kevin.
Good morning. I've had a wonderful opportunity to travel to many different parks. Last summer we were at Acadia National Park and enjoyed hiking around Cadillac Mountain. This summer we're headed up into Washington State. Wondering if there's anything there that would be of particular interest to us, similar type of hiking.
Washington State, Mel?
Well, Olympic National Park, I know this, people say this all the time, but it's true. It really is one of our most beautiful national parks on the Olympic Peninsula in extreme northwestern Washington. It has some of the most beautiful trails you've ever seen on the western side of the park in the rainforest. They start at more or less sea level, and you can go up as pretty much as high as you want to go through incredibly lush forests. Every tree is covered in moss, and there's ferns, and it is, in fact, a rainforest. People sometimes think of the rainforest being in the tropics, but this is a temperate rainforest. And you can also drive way up if you want to. For folks who maybe have less mobility, you can drive up to some incredible mountain views in the northeastern part of Olympic National Park. Again, fantastic wildlife and some of the greatest scenery. And something that people overlook. A couple of years ago, I wrote a story for National Geographic magazine about tide pools and the intertidal zone. And don't, if you go to Olympic, don't miss going out to the shore and exploring the tide pools. Take a tour with a park ranger and learn about the intertidal zone. It's fascinating.
Thanks very much for that call. Our caller also mentioned Acadia National Park, and I know that's number 3 on your list. That's in Maine?
Yes, that's a park with fascinating history, and the mountains there, the hills and the rivers aren't as spectacular as, say, Yellowstone or Glacier, but they're really beautiful. And John D. Rockefeller, I think Jr., gave thousands of acres on Mount Desert Island to help create this national park. And he supervised the building of 50 miles of what they call carriage roads, these wide, graded, smooth roads that are no automobiles are allowed on them, only bicycles and hikers and horses. And they go all through the park, and they make exploring the park very easy. And there's something like 30 stone bridges on these trails that are each one designed for its particular location. So it's just a beautiful park, and again, it's kind of an underrated park, in my opinion.
That's one of the parks on my list. I have a dear college friend who lives in Portland, Maine, and that's not too far from there, I believe.
No, I think it's probably 3 hours or something.
And close enough.
Yeah, it's worth going. And, of course, the Maine coast is famous for those rocky, wave-swept seashores, and Acadia has plenty of those.
Well, Bill Martin's my producer-director, says don't forget about the Scudic Peninsula, which is a secondary area of the park, Peninsula.
Yes. Most of the park is on Mount Desert Island, and it shares the island with some little quaint, you know, Maine towns and lobster fishermen and all those things you think of with Maine. To get to Scudic, you have to go back to the mainland across the bridge, go north a little ways, and then there's this wonderful rocky peninsula that you can go visit. And there's another area called Isle of Ho, which is an island that you have to go back to the mainland, drive to a little town called Stonington, and take a ferry to this little island. And if you do that, you're almost guaranteed that you're going to be have a solitary experience. Beautiful little island that's actually part of the national park.
Our next caller is Tom in Burlington. Hello, Tom.
If you're driving down to Washington, I hope you do, 75 miles from Washington is Harper's Ferry, and that is where the Shenandoah River and the Potomac River come together, and that's where John Brown attacked the armory there, and Jefferson stood on the hill there. It's a wonderful spot, and you really should see that. And then 25 miles from that is Antietam, where they had the big battle of Antietam, and it's a real pretty place. And I hope you can stay a day at one of these places. Then on the way there, maybe 25 miles from Washington is Great Falls, where the Potomac River goes over the falls. And then when you get into Washington, as you're going in Washington, it's called the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal. And that goes all the way from Harper's Ferry. You could actually ride a bicycle all the way down to Washington, D.C. from there.
Wow.
And if you have your bikes with you, the way to really see Washington is take a bicycle or have bikes. And then you could go, when you go to Washington, it might be nice to stand at the steps of the Lincoln Memorial or stand at the western part, the western side of the Capitol building and look out over the whole thing. And one place you really should see is the Library of Congress. It's really a fascinating place, and you could spend a whole day there.
I bet you I could. Tom, thank you for all of those suggestions. Unfortunately, we're not driving this time, but maybe another time. And biking around Washington, D.C. sounds appealing to me as well.
Yeah.
Thanks for all those suggestions. The Library of Congress. I might have to make another trip, though, since I just have 2 days, and I'm not sure I can do everything I want to do.
Those were great suggestions. And the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal path that he mentioned is fabulous. You can go for a walk, go for a jog, go for a bike ride, starting in, I think, Georgetown, and heading up the Potomac as far as you want to go. Beautiful, beautiful resource.
So who wants to visit a national park this summer? Who wants to recommend a national park for the rest of us to consider? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking with a national park expert, and we'd love to hear from you. It's going to be a cloudy day today with a chance of showers in northern Wisconsin, mostly sunny in the south. Highs will be in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Turning cooler tomorrow, mostly cloudy and cool with highs ranging from the mid-50s in the north to the low 60s in the south. There's also a chance of frost in north-central Wisconsin tomorrow. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, about 6:45 now on this Tuesday, May 29th. Coming up after 7, we will talk with a political scientist about the Bain debate, the battle over Bain, and the effect it might have on voters in the presidential campaign. That's coming up after 7 o'clock. Talking now about our national parks with Mel White, who is a regular contributor to National Geographic magazine, author of National Geographic, Complete National Parks of the United States, co-author of the forthcoming Secrets of the National Parks. And let's go back to your list of your top 10 parks, Mel. I think we're on number 5, which is Blue Ridge Parkway. This is in Virginia to North Carolina.
Right. One of the first stories I did for National Geographic Traveler quite some years ago was a story on the Blue Ridge Parkway. I took about 4 or 5 days and drove the whole length of it. I believe it's about 400 miles. I happened to hit there just at the peak fall foliage season in October. I still remember how incredible those maple trees and oaks and hickories looked along that parkway. And I don't know if you know the concept of these parkways. There's a few of them in the country, including the Natchez Trace Parkway down in the south. But they're low-speed roads. The speed limit's no more than 45 in any one place. There's no billboards. There's very limited access. The landscape isn't protected within the viewing sites almost all the way. And the Blue Ridge Parkway not only has this incredible fall foliage, but climbs up to some amazing views along the way in the Blue Ridge section of the Great Smoky Mountains. Just a wonderful park, and especially for people who might have limited mobility. You can get some wonderful scenery just from your car, and there's great, easy, short trails right along the parkway. You don't have to go for a long hike to get away from the road and see some beautiful scenery.
Sounds spectacular. Let's go back to the phones. Eric in Milwaukee is with us now. Hello, Eric.
Hi. I was wondering if you could talk about... I believe St. John's is a national park in the United States Virgin Islands. If maybe just go over the history, and I think there are some campsites there, Maho Bay or Cinnamon Bay.
Have you been there, Eric?
I've been to the Virgin Islands, and I've been to St. John's. I hadn't had opportunity to go throughout the what I was told like the national park, but it was very beautiful while I was there.
I can imagine. St. John's National Park in the Virgin Islands?
Yes, that's one of our subtropical national parks, and it may be most famous for some of the most beautiful beaches. You know, there's a couple of organizations that every year publish their list of the world's 10 most beautiful beaches, and quite often some of the beaches on St. John are on that list. And it has snorkeling, one of the... You know, most national park trails are land trails, obviously, and sometimes national parks have canoe trails, but that park actually has a snorkeling trail with signs underwater.
I want to go there.
And you know, some of those really beautiful tropical fish, the multicolored tropical fish, and that's all offshore. A large part of St. John Island is also in the national park, and it has some nice hiking trails and some historical ruins from back in the days when there were sugar plantations on the island. So it is a unique place in our national park system, and one that a lot of people don't know about.
Thank you so much, Eric, for suggesting that. It's on my list too now. What about Point Reyes? Is that it? Point Reyes National Seashore in California?
Yes, that's just north of San Francisco, just really about an hour, and it's quite a large area that combines that beautiful sort of Mediterranean-style California scenery with beautiful beaches and some fine wildlife watching, especially if you're a bird watcher. Again, I'm this list is skewed because I'm a bird watcher, but it's one of the best bird watching sites in America for everything from seabirds to land birds. Just a great recreation area. It's one of our national seashores.
And that's number four on your list. We did talk about number three on your list, which was Acadia in Maine.
Right.
Let's go to number two, Big Bend National Park in Texas.
Yes. This is one of the more remote parks in the lower 48. In Alaska, there's some extremely remote parks, but if you're talking about the lower 48 states, this is one of the more remote parks. It's way down in the southwestern corner of Texas. It's called Big Bend because the Rio Grande River makes a big loop down there in southwestern Texas. And Big Bend National Park takes up the tip of that loop. Just a fantastically beautiful park. If you have any interest in geology whatsoever, this is a must-see park because of the variety of landforms there, volcanic rocks, and volcanic, the remains of magma flows and dikes and all these things, terms that geologists use. It's almost like three parks in one. There's the Rio Grande, which has lush vegetation. There's most of it is Chihuahuan desert with beautiful cactus, beautiful wildflowers. And then in the middle of it are the Chisos Mountains, which rise to more than 7,000 feet. And on top of them, there are actually aspens. There's Douglas fir. There's Arizona cypress trees. Lush, beautiful canyon forests up in the mountains. It's a wonderful and very one of our lesser known parks.
Wow, something for everyone in Big Bend. We'll hold off on your top choice or your number one national park to visit for just a few minutes, as we just have a few minutes to go. If you would like to ask a question or share a recommendation for a national park we might want to visit, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Mel White, who is the author of National Geographic, Complete National Parks of the United States. And our next caller is June in Shawano. Hello, June.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guests. I'd like to suggest two more things with Washington. Washington at night is beautiful, and there's nothing more beautiful in my mind than the Iwo Jima Memorial, which is across the river in the Palisades.
Sounds great.
And, of course, the National Cathedral. It has had difficulties since the earthquake, but if it's possible, it is fabulous because they rushed it to get all the artisans who are disappearing to do the work, and they have something you might enjoy, and that is they have herb gardens.
Oh, wonderful.
They sell the herbs. And finally, the Arizona and the Carlsbad Caverns in New Mexico. Arizona is a wonder of many things. The Painted Desert, the Petrified Forest, and, of course, the big one, the Grand Canyon.
Oh, my goodness. Of course. How could we forget the Grand Canyon? You want to talk a little bit about any of those places in Arizona or New Mexico, Mel?
Well, I'll mention something. This book you mentioned that will be coming out in the fall, The Secrets of the National Parks, published by the National Geographic Book Division. I wrote about Grand Canyon for that one. And, for instance, many people know that Grand Canyon has two units, the South Unit and the North Unit. And 90% of the people who go to the park go only to the South Unit. So by going to the North Unit, which has some wonderful, in fact, and some people believe better views of the canyon from the North Unit than the South Unit, you're immediately cutting out 90% of the 5 million visitors a year that go to that park simply by going to the North Unit. Now, it is a little bit out of the way. It takes about 5 hours to drive from the south to the north. But if you really want some solitude, that's one way to do it. The other statistic there is that 90% of the people who go to the park never go below the rim. That is, they simply look at the canyon from the rim and don't go down into the canyon. Now, going down to the canyon requires some serious preparation and knowing the dangers and being prepared and having the proper equipment and footwear and things like that. But, again, if you want to get away from the crowds, just go for a hike down into the canyon. It doesn't have to be a big, long hike. You can just do it for a few hours, but you'll get away from the crowds.
June, thank you for all of those great ideas. Vin in Madison emails, Wisconsin has national scenic riverways, for example, the St. Croix, and the National Ice Age Trail. Lots of hiking to do on the National Ice Age Trail, too. Mel, do you know anything about that?
Yes, actually I do. Mm-hmm. Yes, the river is a fantastically scenic river, and at one point it forms the border between Wisconsin and Minnesota, which I think is why it's attributed to both states. The Ice Age Trail is very diverse, and I think it's pretty much still kind of in the process of being developed. They have long-range plans for it, but certainly parts of it are complete now. And again, if you're interested in geology, that is a wonderful place to visit.
Let's go to Eric now in Lake Elmo, Minnesota. Hi, Eric.
Hello. My wife and I like to go to parks, and since it's my turn to pick our destination, I was interested in Black Canyon of the Gunnison and Great Sand Dune in Colorado.
Can you tell us about those, Mel?
Yes, Great Sand Dunes is a wonderful place, and it's actually one of our most recent national parks. Just about 10 years ago, it was upgraded from National Monument to National Park, and they made some land trade-offs. They gave some land to the National Forest, and they took some land from the National Forest to make the park more complete. And it is an incredibly fascinating place because of the way those... there are sand dunes there that reach more than 200 feet high, and you're free to walk out into those sand dunes as far as you want to. And you can actually camp in the sand dunes at night. And if you want to talk about a solitary, quiet experience, you just walk a couple of miles out into the world, one of the world's largest areas of sand dunes, and pitch your tent out there and spend the night and enjoy the night sky. And you can also in the park, you can go up into the Sangre de Cristo Mountains, way up into the alpine zone there, too. So it's a really diverse park. I have to say I've not been to Black Canyon of the Gunnison, but that offers the opportunity to take ranger-guided boat tours. You don't have to be an accomplished boater to visit that park. You can take a ranger-guided boat tour and see some of the great scenery, or you can paddle your own canoe or kayak in this incredibly deep, narrow canyon in southwestern Colorado.
Well, before we run out of time, let's talk about number one on your list, Rocky Mountain National Park. That's a gorgeous place.
Oh, gosh. And a lot of people know it, too, because it's definitely in the top 10 most visited national parks. And in this new book we're doing, we give a few suggestions for how to get away from the crowds there a little bit. But I went to that park when I was quite young, and it put a spell on me that has never been broken. I think it has some of the most beautiful scenery in the world. I remember standing on an overlook there, and a man from Scotland, I struck up a conversation with him, and he was just in awe, and he said, "You people in the United States, you have everything here. You have these mountains that look like the Alps. You have deserts that are like Africa. You have rainforests." He was just gushing about the scenery in Rocky Mountain National Park and saying it was better than the Alps, and frankly, I think it is too.
Well, Mel, we're out of time, Mel, so I hope you'll come back when your new book is out this fall.
Sure, just give me a call and let me know. It'd be a pleasure.
Will do. Mel White is a regular contributor to National Geographic Magazine, co-author of the forthcoming Secrets of the National Parks, The Expert's Guide to Getting Off the Tourist Trail, which is due out this fall sometime. Thanks for all your great suggestions, too. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Amanda Magnus and to Rob Ferret for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.